Are you ready to listen to a podcast?
This is TripleYourClients.com with your host, Andy Brown.
Find, subscribe, and listen.
Expert marketing advice to triple your clients today.
Now you can start listening.
Welcome to episode 43 of TripleYourClients.com podcast. My name's Andy Brown, and as ever, it's a sheer pleasure to have you on board wherever you are, whether you're driving to work on the bus, on the train, on the tube, wherever you are. Thank you for joining me on today's show. It's a real pleasure to have you on board, as I say. And also, just to let you know, it's a weekly format, 7 a.m. Monday mornings. That's when I'll be there. You know, this show gets released onto iTunes and then gets distributed onto other channels. I'm actually a big fan of the app Stitcher. That's one of my must-have apps on my phone. I've got a new iPhone 6 this week. That's what I'm recording the actual podcast on at the moment. Just shows you don't need much technology if you want to record your own show for your own business. And actually, the shows before that were all recorded on a 4S. It doesn't have to be an Apple product. It can be any kind of smartphone. You just need to have the right apps. And we'll talk about that in the future show. And then you just need a SoundCloud account, and away you go. It's very simple. The outlay is very inexpensive, and you can get cracking with your own podcast. So what's today's show about? Well, today's show is about a number of different things. One of them is Barack Obama's presidential email campaign. Obama's email campaign was notable for its success. It raised over $690 million. There's some lessons there for us. I always talk about them when I'm talking to clients about how to change email marketing. We'll touch on all of those. Also, technology, Apple's CarPlay, the difference that's going to be making for your business marketing in the future. Something I touched on last week, which was Inbox Zero, the way in which you can have an inbox with no emails in on a consistent and daily basis, or an hourly basis, actually. That's changed my productivity. Hopefully it will change yours. I'm going to talk about that. That's something that I think will really aid a lot of business owners. I learned it from Chris Maher at learning-everyday.co.uk. I want to talk about the Michelin Guide, being around for well over 100 years and the impact it had when it first launched, and also the way that you can relate all your content marketing to the Michelin Guide. And finally, social media ROI, the return on investment of social media. It gets a lot of flack sometimes. I want to investigate a little bit more about that. So yes, lots to talk about. The show's got a lot of good feedback since it's gone to a weekly format. I've had a busy week. I'm quite chuffed. I stuck to some of my goals, or health goals. A lot of people have been asking me about the diet techniques I use. And I always go back to something I've had a lot of success with, which is juicing. And particularly, I follow someone called Joe Cross, an Australian guy. And a documentary that came out a few years ago called Fat, Sick and Nearly Dead made a big impact on me. I reckon you should check it out. I think it's on Netflix and Amazon. And actually, the latest version, it's not an update, it's a brand new film, but it's called Fat, Sick and Nearly Dead 2. I haven't seen it yet, but I think that will be equally as inspiring and motivating. Shout out to Philips, because I had a juicer a month or so ago and it just packed in, burnt out the motor. Sent an email just from their support page on their website. Literally within 3 days, I had the latest version of their juicer delivered to me. No cost whatsoever. No awkward questions. I just said it burnt out. Love the product. And they said, "Sir, I'm sorry we can't give you the product that burnt out. Would you like the latest version?" So of course I would like that. And from now on, that was a great customer service story for me. And I'll be hard pressed to move from Philips now because of what happened. So, and now I'm telling you. So it just shows you, just going off a bit of a tangent here. If you do offer great customer service, people will tell others. And if they've got a large audience, then it really is marketing on steroids, as it were, or word of mouth on steroids. So yeah, lots going on in that respect. Took on another AdWords client. 100% focus now on AdWords. I changed my business models, and I'm seeing a lot more traction with it. I had to review what I was doing last year. We're all going to make more money, haven't we? We've got a business equals growth. I thought it was interesting this week that Google Glasses has been ditched. A big project, a lot of investment, but people do look ridiculous wearing those glasses. And Google said, right, we're no longer. And they're very good at pivoting and actually stopping projects that aren't working. They don't sort of hang on to products that they think aren't going to, you know, last and make an impact or be profitable. And it's interesting that they're still ploughing a lot of effort into driverless cars. There's a lot of testing going on in California at the moment. They reckon in 2 years' time it would be public. So we'll see what happens there. But Google is lot more than just the search engine. But the big lesson from the Google Glasses project was that if a big company like Google can change, then why can't a small company, you know, a lot more mobile and flexible? You should be able to, in these times particularly, you should be able to be dynamic enough to change. I mean, it's really tough sometimes, but you know, at least consider it. You know, if market forces, you know, there are shops that I know of in St Andrews which have changed what they're selling because of market forces, and equally, you should at least consider it. And I considered it, and I have changed to being totally AdWords. AdWords is more than just adverts in Google. It's, for instance, YouTube advertising. Did you realize that when you see an advert in YouTube, you know, those first 5 seconds of an ad that comes up, and then you're waiting for the skip ad button to come up and click on it. But the advertiser doesn't pay for that time of you watching those 5 seconds, and actually only pays when the whole video is shown. So a lot of opportunities within YouTube advertising that a lot of business owners aren't aware of. And I'm going to talk about that in another show, because there's some opportunity there, particularly as, for instance, Mark Zuckerberg was saying, you know, video is going to be everywhere. I mean, it already is, but, you know, he was saying that Facebook feed's going to be, your Facebook feed will be 90% video in 2020. I don't know if that's truly going to be the case, because we all like text updates and photos, but you know that more video is appearing as you scroll through your news feed, so it is increasing, and video, and YouTube's not going anywhere. It is the number one player when it comes to watching video. So, you know, watch this space, but be totally aware of the fact that you can pivot if you need to. It's big companies do it, and so can small ones. So I mentioned at the top of the show there, Barack Obama's presidential email campaign. I don't know if you heard anything about it, or, you know, it was obviously very successful for him. And it did get mocked by Jon Stewart on The Daily Show and others. But the reason why it got mocked was because of the over-familiar nature of the emails. The subject titles, for instance, were "Join Me for Dinner." Another one was "It's Officially Over." "It Doesn't Have to Be This Way." "Wow" was one, just the word "wow." And also another subject title that just had one word in was "Hey," H-E-Y. Now, that does sound like a casual approach to email marketing. Was it effective? But as I said, it was very effective. $690 million was raised, and the bulk of it was from email marketing. So another massive lesson that email marketing isn't going anywhere. It is very effective, and one of the major goals in your business must be to build a list. It must be. I can't overemphasize that. Even if you've got a big following on Facebook or Twitter, that's on a third-party platform. You do need that list, because then it gives you the opportunity to send out emails which have a one-to-one conversation with the reader. Now, to have that conversation in the first place, they need to open the email, and that's why the subject title is obviously very important. If I look at some of the great performing emails I've sent out in recent times, all with over 40% open rate, I know it's because of the headline. I put a lot of time to get the headline right. I'll give you some examples. For instance, one of them is "I'm Concerned." That's it. That's the headline. And a lot of people open that because obviously they're curious to find out what I'm concerned about. And then I go on to talk about an issue in marketing, what I'm concerned. And so the subject title leads on to the content of the email. That's something that you can try yourself, because I'm sure there's something in your market that you're concerned about and you want to tell your list about. Another title is "The Truth About Your Most Important Marketing." That served me very well, got a high open rate. And equally for your marketing, you can talk about the truth about an element of your business or issues in your industry. For instance, if you're a real estate agent, you could put the truth about buying a house in St Andrews. Or if you're in the market for a house, then of course you're going to open an email like that. You certainly want to know the truth about something. There's a lot of curiosity in that email subject title. You're wondering what it's about. You know you're going to learn something about it. It's almost like you're spilling the beans. Everyone wants to know a secret. So see if you can use that, the truth about, and then you fill in the blank. The other one that's worked well is, are you making this schoolboy error? So that implies that there's something out there that's simple to correct. You might be doing it. You might be making that mistake in your business. Or if you're a consumer, you might be pointing out that you're making a mistake, but then you have the product to solve it. You can play a different ways on that headline, but it does work well. And it's a question. Questions always work well in subject titles. It's not certainly not bland, and it does ask the question. So again, it's, are you making this schoolboy error? Another subject title that's worked well for me is 15 quick and easy ways to improve your copy. So two key things there is, one, it's got a number in there, 15. I think numbers are important in copywriting. They always stand out from a body of text. And also, quick and easy. Since the beginning of time, us humans always loved a quick and easy solution to anything. So if you can imply that you have something to share or a product to share that is quick and easy to use, then you're going to get a good open rate. And that's why I used 15 quick and easy ways to improve your copy. Another one is, here's everything I know about headlines. That's worked well. I was wondered when I sent it out whether I'm always testing, and I did wonder whether it was powerful enough. But it seemed to work really well. I guess it's because it's implying that we're going to have a one-to-one conversation where I spill the beans and tell you everything you need to know about one part of marketing for your own business, whatever. Here's everything you need to know about buying a house. It's rather than just having the buying a house guide, which might not be that sexy or intriguing. Here's everything I know about headlines. It's a personal opinion, and I put the word I in. And sometimes I put the word you in, because that's obviously of self-interest to the reader. But also you can play around with I. I mean, the first one I talked about was I'm concerned. That seemed to work well. It's a lot of testing. There's no secrets, but particularly with set rules that always work. You need to be testing. The Obama campaign, they talked about how they had 20 staff writers and they're always testing, A-B split testing. I use the software AWeber. You can get that at tripleyourclients.com/AWeber. AWeber spelled AWEBER. Used it for well over 10 years. That is an affiliate link, by the way. I'm being totally transparent with you, but it is a product that I believe in and have used for many, many years, well over 10 years, and had lists over 100,000 people on it. There are other products like MailChimp and Constant Contact. The thing I like about AWeber is the fact that it does single opt-in, so you don't have to have a confirmation email sent to someone when they join a list. On the downside, if you're a shop and most of the people are signing up on paper, on a notepad, for instance, and then you need to add them to the email list, then AWeber's not so great with that, because each email has to be sent a confirmation email, whereas MailChimp, they just get put into your list. So there are pros and cons, but AWeber's much better if you are maybe a travel company and you have a guide to having the top 10 things to do on a holiday guide, and it's all based around e-commerce or an online website, then AWeber is better than MailChimp, in my opinion. But there's different products with different scenarios. So yes, A/B testing, testing all the time. Barack Obama's campaign, they had headlines like "Join me for dinner, it's officially over." Doesn't have to be this way. Wow and hey, as you can imagine. They're all, like I say, over familiar emails. You might think they didn't work, but they worked astonishingly well, and you should consider them in your own marketing. Do your headlines make you want to open your own email, let alone your customer or your customer avatar? Do you write an email and then think, oh, what can I quickly add into the subject title, and then wham, send it out? Because often, if you don't spend much time thinking about the best subject title, you're going to get a poor open rate. If you get a poor open rate, then no one's going to read your email. So get your priorities right on that. Spend as much time writing the subject title as the actual content of the email. So yes, a lot to be learned from previous email marketing. I like to share what's worked for me and also what I read about on other websites so that it can help you ultimately. Please let me know whether you have your own email marketing story, and I'd love to share it on the show. Podcasting. Why do I do a podcast? Well, in the States, 15% of people are listening to podcasts, and that's as many users as are on Twitter and also Instagram. No way is podcasting like a secondary channel, a channel that you can dismiss or it's going away. A lot of companies are putting a lot of investment into podcasting, and it will be mainstream. You will find your friends and family talking about it. And I do believe that your business should have a podcast. It's a great way of getting content out and telling your stories and a way of entertaining your audience, as well as obviously asking for the buy or the sell when the time is right. Now, one of those technologies supporting podcasting is Apple CarPlay, technology that is being put into brand new cars that then allow you to plug in using a lightning cable your iPhone, probably your iPad as well, but definitely your iPhone. So this technology is actually now available in one brand of car, probably a car that few of you got because it's a Ferrari FF, start at the top, but it will be coming into all models of car in the next few years. Actually, last year, Mercedes and Volvo were all geared up to release cars with the Apple CarPlay in, but it didn't happen, so hopefully in 2015. And if you go to applecarplay.co.uk or their UK website, they list all the models of cars makes of cars that are likely to have this technology. And basically, I mean, I could read out Audi, Nissan, Volkswagen, Peugeot, BMW, but really, it's the whole list. It's every car made has shown an interest in this. So it's not like just a select few. You know, Apple CarPlay will be in every car come 2016, 2017, the new cars. It will become mainstream. And Google is just as keen on this technology. They have something called Android Auto. That's similar. I haven't read as much about that, but it's just highlighting the fact that podcasting is here to stay. This smart in-car entertainment, driven by external devices like smartphones, is here to stay, and why you should invest time in podcasting, into podcasting. Because I know when I'm driving down to England, it's frustrating that I can't just listen to the content I do freely when I'm out walking or running. I wish I could, but I mean, I know you can get your, you know, you can play and then you put your earphones into your ears and listen, but to have that no hassle way of just plugging in your phone and using the controls in the car, that would be great, and it's just around the corner, like I say. And the reason why it's almost like a plug-in technology where you can plug in external devices is because the lifespan of a car is a lot longer, obviously, than, you know, the model of a technology. Technology's got to be able to cope with the fact that other technology is going to change. That's why you sort of plug in an iPhone rather than have it all built into the player. And I understand that you can change the CarPlay using Siri, so it's voice activation or touchscreen or buttons, but we'll see how it goes. Certainly 2015 is a big year for podcasting, and you should, if you can, invest some time in looking into the fact whether it's suitable for your business. I believe for most businesses there's an opportunity there, massive opportunity now. In Fife, there's businesses you might not have imagined would have a podcast, and they are now. In future, I'll talk about some of those businesses that are using podcasting to promote their brand. So at the end of last show, I talked about something called Inbox Zero, which was my effort to improve my email productivity. As a business owner, you probably get swamped, particularly as Monday morning, swamped with email. And all through the week, you're fighting your inbox. It can really depress you, can't it, with so much email in there, you know, lots of distractions as well. And recently, I read an article by Chris Marr at learning-everyday.co.uk, And he reviewed everything that was out there about Inbox Zero, this strategy of keeping your inbox to zero emails, particularly the whole term was invented by a guy called Merlin Mann from 43 Folders. So he covered that. But also his article, I'll put it in the show notes, covers a lot of other resources. And it got me thinking, like, yeah, how do I do it? You know, should I follow Chris's lead or should I invent a new system? Well, why invent a new system when there's a proven system out there that works? So basically, in a nutshell, when an email comes in, you need to acknowledge it and take action on each one. So there's three different actions you can do. You can do whatever work is implied from the email or asked in the email. So it might be someone emailing you and asking you to send some information back very quickly. They want a response. Maybe you've agreed a meeting and they just want confirmation on that or pricing. No, it's something that can be, something you can do there and then in like 2 or 3 minutes. In that case, you just do it. You know, if you've gone into your email and you're trying to get back down to zero, just do that work. If the email is something where it's an action, it's a little more than 5 minutes, it's almost like a mini project, it's something that you need to set aside some time to, I call that, you know, you call it deferring it. And to defer it, you need to basically take that email. And what I do is I archive it, basically. I take the information from the email and then I put the email into a productivity tool, so a task manager tool, for instance, a good one that's been developed by the good guys at All Things over in Dundee, is a great tool for adding something that you can then go back and review in a list and decide when you want to do it and schedule it. There's other tools out there, but that's one example. Or, you know, you just put it into on your notepad. It just depends how you control the task you do, but you need to get it out of your email box. That's the critical thing. So you basically deferred it to another time, but you don't use your email box as a task manager. That's what I've been doing for so many years. And it's tough. It's tough because when you go into your email, apart from responding to email, you're looking at all the actions you have to do and they're all there in your inbox. That is a terrible way of doing any kind of work. It's a real sucker of time. It just kills you. It really does. You need to get those tasks out into a task manager. So that's my way of dealing with it. I'm basically deferring and archiving it if I don't do it straight away. And the third one is delete it. You know, there's a little email that comes in. You need to just quickly scan it and go, right, that's great. It might be a promotion for something, another company. It might be an article from a list that you subscribe to. If it's not that interesting, then you just delete it. If you know that you might want to refer to it in the future, you just archive it. I use the business version of Google Mail, and that has all the tools in there. You might have different tools within your email provider, but if you can work out a way to do one of those three actions, do it, defer it, or delete it, then you will have success. Let me know how you get on. I mean, I've been doing this since the beginning of the year, or since I read Chris's article, and I have had success, and I thoroughly enjoy having a zero inbox. And also, it's all part of how you frame your day. I mean, I talked about the morning ritual in the last show, and also how to have this most important thing set up to complete in the day. Check out Leo's article. I'll put it in the show notes. Leo at senhabits.net. He wrote about it. MIT, the most important thing. You need to get that thing done in the day to feel good about your day. You might have 2 or 3 things to do, but if you don't get that major thing done, then it really does drain your enthusiasm for work and it just drags you down. So you need to complete that, and it's like eating the frog, you know, you get that horrible thing out of the way. So it's difficult to do if you're struggling with your inbox, if you're diving in there, if you're sort of randomly checking your emails. So you need to schedule when you check your email box, have this do it, defer it, delete it, so you can get it back to zero. And also do your most important thing first. If you can get all that working in a sort of format for the day, then your productivity really does increase, you know, just because you've got less distraction. I always say that an email box represents someone else's agenda, and it certainly does. The people are typically asking things of you when you go into your email box, and if you respond straight away, then you know, then it's tough, isn't it? Because you're working to their agenda and you don't get anything of what you set out on your agenda. So you must start your day with your own agenda. And often people will come in with all these different tasks they want me to do in a day. And that's where I'm archiving and then putting what they ask as a mini project or a goal into my task manager software. Or you're writing it down, but you're getting it out of the inbox. You're moving it on. And then you're always in control. And I think that's a good lesson for any business owner. Don't get swamped or distracted by your email box. Right. That's enough of emails and email marketings and using your inbox. Let's move on to content marketing. And just a quick one, really, because people might think content marketing has been around for, well, the first sort of reference to it by Forbes, I think it's Forbes magazine, came out with a statement about it in 96, which is a long time ago now, isn't it? But in recent years, we've heard a lot about content marketing. But a very good example of content marketing going back over 100 years is the Michelin Guide, you know, the people who make tyres. They decided that, they could advertise great posters about how great the tyres were, but how could they use the tools they had available to build on their brand? And they decided to create a free guide which talked about auto maintenance, accommodation, travel tips, and give it away for free. And actually, they were, the first edition was given away free to 35,000 people. And it was 400 pages, so it was quite a thick, thick guide. And that got the ball rolling. That was their first test into content marketing. It worked so well, really. People were talking about it. They wanted to know who Michelin were, and obviously within the guide, although it wasn't promotional, they wouldn't, you know, there was a mention of the tyres, but it was pure content. It really was a lot of value involved. And now we always associate the tyres with the Michelin guide, and some people will know about the guide, particularly the restaurant guide, more than the tyres, but it's still the same company. And it makes you think, in today's age, what can you provide that isn't promotional, but it's of value? It's teaching your customer something that's related to your product. And just to show you that it's not brand new, it's always been around. You know, if you can be a teacher in your industry and provide value and content, and it can be a paid or it can be free. I mean, free is obviously a good way to do it, through podcasting or video or blogging. All of these ways will help your content marketing efforts. And I've got a great little article on some of the other early examples of content marketing, and I'll put it in the show notes for you. Remember, you are a content publisher. That's how you should imagine or view your company. You're publishing content. You shouldn't always rely on press releases or adverts. The stakes have changed. The world has changed. You are now a content publisher. It's up to you to promote content that you know your customers are going to be interested in. Let me just tell you a little bit about this podcast. When this podcast goes live on Facebook, one strategy I'm using is to upload a short 30-second video as a trailer to the podcast, with a recommendation in the trailer to click on the link below it. I'm doing that because I want to put a sort of a video to the podcast so that people can see what I'm like. And also, I'm acutely aware that people are scrolling through Facebook. If they see a video, then they might play it. Hopefully, they'll play mine. And it acts as a trailer to the podcast. This is how 2015 has changed as opposed to 2014, because Facebook is encouraging people to put videos into their player. In fact, there are now, I believe, more video views on Facebook in a day than there are on YouTube. I mean, that's massive. And at one stage, you would never have thought that was possible. So always think about different ways you can promote your content. And Facebook videos, short 35-second videos or 25-second videos, are a powerful way of promoting any kind of content. So if you've written a blog post, don't just post it. Get your webcam working, talk into the camera. Say you've just written something, talk about maybe the value someone can get from actually reading the blog post, and then putting a link below, and then post onto Facebook. Be a little bit different. Not everyone's doing this, but this is a fantastic technique to get leverage, and more likely to get people to share. And that's where you get a lot of more likes on your page when people start liking it and sharing the content because they really, really like it. Right, Facebook, social media, but also Twitter, Pinterest, all different channels. But, and this is a big, big but, some businesses don't buy totally into social media. They're not very socially aware on social media because they don't truly believe in it. They don't really believe there's a return on investment. They're doing it because other people are doing it. That's the only reason. They read the publications, they read blog posts, they know that people are saying be on social media, but they don't truly believe it. They don't truly believe it because they don't see a return. They think they're doing some tracking, they think they're measuring the stats, and they don't believe it's worth their time. And Jay Baer at Jay Baer Today does a video show, usually about 3 minutes long, nearly every day. He's one of the gurus in this space. He wrote on the January the 14th, he did a quick video. It was titled Why Social Media Will Never Get the Credit It Deserves. And it was a great little video because he reminded us that sometimes products are sold on websites, e-commerce websites, etc., which are totally down to social media, but will never be reflected this way within the stats. He talked about how his wife had given him a Christmas present. It was a lovely Italian bag to carry his laptop in from a company called Picado, or Picadro, that's it. Sorry, Picuadro, Italian brand. They are doing very well on social media, particularly within a face group for frequent travelers. So there's a lot of buzz going on in this group, the best bag to get for your laptop, travel luggage. And Jay Baer, he was on there, he came across this recommendation. He told his wife, this is what I'd like for Christmas gifting's changed a bit, hasn't it? Now you kind of give the exact link that you want someone to buy that gift on. There's not much sort of romance and surprise left in Christmas gifting anymore, or maybe birthday gifting as well. But she went ahead and she bought it. Now, when she bought it, she probably typed in the name into Google, or she went directly to the website. And so the stats at this company will show it as a Google referral or a direct referral, which is a shame, really, because that whole sale was really because of this social media buzz and conversation. So the only way around this, really, is you've got to survey your customer base and find out whether they heard about you through social media and try and tie it into the sales that you're having on your e-commerce website. So maybe in the past you've done the odd survey just to find out where you want to go with a product. I believe you'll find a lot more companies will be surveying you and offering prizes because they really want to find out whether social media influenced you to buy their product. It's critical they know, and it's critical you know as well, because it's not always easy to track. And talking about the return on investment on what's called the dark social, as Jay Baer calls it, this area where we can't quite tell what's being tracked. Mark Schaefer, he made a comment on episode 34 of Chris's podcast, learning-everyday.co.uk. Episode 34, it's a great little comment. It's a very blunt one, but it really struck me because they were talking about the return on investment on social media. And he talked about what's the return on investment of being bankrupt. And that's hard hitting. It's like if you don't acknowledge it now, then don't try and work out what to do in 5 years' time on social media, because you're going to be bankrupt. You haven't really got time to really think about it then. Get on the case now. Struggle with the problems of working out the exact numbers, but do appreciate that particularly younger generations are spending so much time on social media. This is where a lot of your marketing has to be. I'm saying that even though obviously my revenue as a company, as an agency, comes from AdWords, because I believe there's still a place for pay per click, for paid traffic. I believe any marketing done by a business has to be over multiple channels, paid and organic and across all different platforms. So I'm not saying one's better than another. I'm just saying you need to acknowledge social media. You need to put all your energies into one of the channels that works best, best for your customers. Right? I was going to say best for you, but actually you've got to think about it the other way. What's best for the customer? Where are they hanging out? Where do they want to hear the messages from you? And it comes back to this whole school of being a teacher. Where can you provide the best content? So Gary V once mentioned that you know, what is the return on investment of having a mother? You know, when he was, people were asking about social media, which I thought that's getting to the core again. And on that same topic, Mark Schaefer saying, you know, what is return on investment of being bankrupt? These are blunt statements because these people are committed to social media and they know that's where business has to be for some of its marketing. You can't dismiss it and you need to believe in it. Sorry to be so headstrong on that, but it is a message that I am acutely aware of, and I believe businesses have to take it on board and you know, run with it, but be social at the same time. It's tough, I know, but you know, we need to listen to experts and case studies and work out the direction that we want to go in. So that's the end of the show. Thank you very much for taking the time out to listen to some of these different topics: email marketing, list building, different subject titles that work for you, where we're going with podcasting, the different technologies, Michelin guide, little story there. And also, like I say, in the show notes, you can see some other early examples over 100 years old of products that were marketed through content marketing. I find it all quite fascinating. If you enjoyed the show, you want to hear more from me, then please leave a review at tripleyourclients.com/iTunes. We're all governed or we're all guided by reviews, whether it's on TripAdvisor, Amazon, Kindle, iTunes. Reviews is the driver, main driver, is the business lesson there actually for your own business. You need to be getting reviews. It helps in every area of your business, particularly, well, I'll talk about AdWords. You know, you do need reviews because they will increase what's called your quality score if you have good reviews. It's not just how much you can pay, who's got the biggest wallet. It comes down to how good you're serving the customer. You know, Google wants to have advertising that offers solutions to people that is relevant. Just because you've got the biggest wallet doesn't mean that your ad will be at the top. There are other factors involved, and one of them is related to reviews. It's a whole idea of serving your customer in the best way, in a relevant way. So if I've been relevant in any way, please leave a review at tripleyourclients.com/iTunes. Until next time, take care, and I'll speak to you in a week.
Have you ever wished you had more visitors to your business website, where you switch a button and instantly benefit from a steady, consistent stream of new potential clients and customers? One such proven way to do this is by using Google AdWords. Unfortunately, many businesses fail to take advantage of this opportunity, make huge mistakes, and waste their marketing budget. This is why I recommend you head over to tripleyourclients.com and grab Andy's free 44-page report on the 17 ways to maximize your Google AdWords ROI today. Simply enter your name and email on the homepage to have full access to Andy's special report within seconds.